Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning. It is the 28th of August. The sun is rising and Jesus has risen indeed. It is good news. It is the hope of our future as believers who have put our trust in Jesus, that there is always hope in future. The tomb is empty. And as we travel through this world and the difficulties that we often encounter, that those things don't go away because of that truth, but they find their context in the midst of that truth, that we know that in the travail of today, that there's going to be hope that things will one day be restored and renewed. And that is the good news that we share each morning on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, happy as always and say often, but really mean it, to be joined in studio by my friends and fellow believers, Logan Rausch and Paul Perreault. It's just a delightful morning to be in studio with them as they bring the news and produce the show and bring the guests that just speak so articulately to the news and to lifestyle conversations from a Christian perspective. Happy to be with you as listeners all around the Midwest area, out in Hartford, Connecticut, mindful of the fact that you're experiencing record heat today out in Hartford and thinking about you. Just stay cool the best that you can as well. And lots to get to on Faith Radio Mornings. We've had a great first hour of the show with Rosemary Stein as well as Tommy Binion, and looking forward to hour two here with Drew Griffin from Providence Magazine, who wrote a great article released yesterday on his website, providence.org, and it was reflecting on the intersection of American ideals and Christian values from the life of John McCain, who obviously passed away this last weekend. And whatever your views are on McCain and his policies, I think there was a unanimity of view on him from both sides of the aisle, that he was a man of fortitude and humor and just love for his country. And a statement came out yesterday where he said goodbye to the country before he passed. And we read the first 2 minutes of that statement at the first part of our show, and we're going to just now catch the remaining 2 minutes. It's just this beautiful, empowering message for us as Americans.
We are citizens of the world's greatest republic, a nation of ideals, not blood and soil. We are blessed and are a blessing to humanity when we uphold and advance those ideals at home and in the world. We have helped liberate more people from tyranny and poverty than ever before in history, and we have acquired great wealth and power in the progress. We weaken our greatness when we confuse our patriotism with tribal rivalries that have sown resentment and hatred and violence in all the corners of the globe. We weaken it when we hide behind walls rather than tear them down, when we doubt the power of our ideals rather than trust them to be the great force for change they have always been. We are 325 million opinionated, vociferous individuals. We argue and compete and sometimes even vilify each other in our raucous public debates. But we have always had so much more in common with each other than in disagreement. If only we remember that and give each other the benefit of the presumption that we all love our country, we will get through these challenging times. We will come through them stronger than before. We always do. 10 years ago, I had the privilege to concede defeat in the election for president. I want to end my farewell to you with heartfelt faith in Americans that I felt so powerfully that evening. I feel it powerfully still. Do not despair of our present difficulties. We believe always in the promise and greatness of America, because nothing is inevitable here. Americans never quit. We never surrender. We never hide from history. We make history. Farewell, fellow Americans. God bless you, and God bless America.
love that walk-up music for Drew Griffin of Providence Magazine. It's an online journal for Christianity and how it sort of intersects with American foreign policy. Really unique and important view to think about our faith in light of some of the global policy statements that we make. And Drew, I know you're just back from Israel. Are you sort of over the jet lag at this point?
I am, yeah. It's taking me a good solid week to overcome that 7 hours that I lost when I came back to the States, but I have recovered.
Well, welcome back to the show. And I know you just released a great article about John McCain yesterday, the 27th, on providencemag.com. I recommend our listeners to go and check out this article where you really do this job of exploring American ideals and how they connect to John McCain's faith, but more important, even just our Christian faith. So talk us through some of these main points of interest where our faith and our country and the ideals can come together.
Yes. The passing of McCain just, I think, really provided kind of an opportunity to reflect on who he was as a man, and specifically for Providence, since we focus on kind of the intersection of American foreign policy and Christianity, to look at this man who was a Christian, who was a believer, whose faith was very important to him, although he was very kind of tight-lipped about his faith. He wasn't overly vocal about it, but I think his life displayed a certain level of grace and a certain level of conviction that really spoke to the presence of, I think, the spirit and the presence of kind of a Christian understanding of Christian virtue that then filtered out the policy that he engaged in, especially on the world stage. So what we tried to do is identify four kind of characteristics that I think marked his foreign policy, and I think are informative to Christians. And the first idea is that of American kind of in general, that as that final statement that was just read before the break, it kind of indicated that he had this just high view of America and its role in the world. And a lot of times critics of American exceptionalism and America in general typically try to conflate the idea of exceptionalism with perfectionism. You just think America has never done anything wrong, and you want to overlook its flaws. And that's not the case at all. And I don't think that was the case for John McCain. What he's saying there, what he's advocating for, is that there is something exceptional, that America is an exception to the rule. That as you look across the whole plethora of nations out there, that there's something unique and distinct about America, that it's not just a country, it's an idea. And his life just really bore witness to the impact of the idea, and it literally kept him alive when he was imprisoned for 5 years in Vietnam during the Vietnam War. So American exceptionalism, transcendent purpose, the idea that our lives are not an ends unto themselves, that we're not here just to serve our own self-interest. One of his most famous phrases is that he is always to serve something larger than our own self-interest, a cause larger than our own self-interest. That cause would be America, I think, to him, free. And there's something about rooting your life, and I think this is a particularly Christian understanding. We recognize that there's...
Hey, Drew, we're just getting a bad connection on the phone. You have such important things to say about the idea of finding our identity in something bigger than ourselves, and I really don't want to miss this. So, we're going to go to break a little early here and see if we can get a better connection with Drew Griffin, who has such important words from providencemag.com about the intersection of American values and our Christian faith. Want to make sure we can get him crystal clear with the satellite transmission. So we'll take a break and be back with Drew Griffin on Faith Radio Mornings.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with the Faith in Life Minute. Life after divorce is difficult for children. Tammy Daughtry has been through it, and she's written the book Co-Parenting Works, Helping Your Children Thrive After Divorce.
Have healthy, godly people in your life who will listen, who will love you, who will be the guardrails of your soul, especially during the dark beginning of the post-divorce life, because none of this can be done alone. We can't do it alone as an individual. We can't do it without God. And we especially need our brothers and sisters to walk with us and to stay close in these times of pain, and being very careful to pick healthy, godly people to be those standby, close friends. That made all the difference for me in how I processed everything, was just knowing I had three people I could go to day or night that would love me, would listen, and who would also take all of these things to the Lord.
More from Tammy Dautry can be found at myfaithradio.com.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we had some technical difficulties before the break with some of the cell phone. And Drew, it sounds like you're back on the line.
Yes, I think so. I think we're good.
You know, technology is great. It's so empowering, right? Until it becomes fundamentally disempowering, because when things like this happen, I sort of just look blankly at the world and I don't know what to do, and my computer freezes or my phone shuts down. And so it just, you know, I feel like I'm just tethered to some power greater than myself called technology.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I understand. It's hard. I can to believe we can talk when I'm in Israel, but if I'm in New York, you know, we have problems.
Who knows? We can get back on the plane. We can have a good conversation. Well, I appreciate you joining us on this. And you wrote this article for ProvidenceMag.com that we are referencing before the break. And before the phone cut off, you had some important points to make that I think is good for all of us to hear, is finding our sense of identity and purpose in something bigger than ourselves. And as we've been reflecting on the life of John McCain, that was certainly true of him.
Yes, I think one of the most common phrases that he used is to call us all to serve a cause greater than our own self-interest. And he seemed to kind of root his life in that. And I think that when we have that understanding that we are not ends unto ourselves, that our lives are kind of not our own, that there's something other than the world that we see here that we are called to serve, that there are two kingdoms, especially for Christians, that we are kind of called to understand that we serve. And I think it helps give our lives meaning, but it also, I think, humbles us to recognize that the world's not all about us, and it's not all about our success, that really there's a greater joy in serving others. And Jesus says, you know, no greater love hath any man than when he lays down his life for another. So I think McCain really seemed to kind of give evidence to that in his life. Another characteristic we wanted to kind of point out was just his meekness, that John McCain seemed to be a very meek and relatively humble man. That does not mean that he was weak. I think far from it. He was a man of conviction. He was a man who had his opinions. He was an independence thinker, so he would often aggravate people on the right and on the left. And he had convictions behind those opinions and was not always easily swayed. But one of the things that you see that marked his public life was whether he was victorious or whether he was defeated, there was a certain amount of grace to him, that even in that final statement, you know, he was unsuccessful in his runs for the presidency, but he was complimentary of those who bested him and supported them and wanted to see them succeed, even though he did not. And I think that's something that's sorely lacking in our politics and in our culture right now. And that's one of the things, like, when you are secure in who you are and in your purpose, and you recognize that you're not the ultimate in this world, then you're typically comfortable if other people succeed. And you're comfortable if other people are, if you're not always coming out on top. And it allows you to be gracious and allows you to be humble. You still have your convictions. You're still strong. You still stand for what you believe in. But you don't have to be a jerk about it. And I think that's something that I think we sorely need in politics and in our culture. And then finally, just the idea of kind of a cynical optimism. And Providence, what we do is really try and inform our readership and call the Christian community to look at the world through kind of a Christian realist perspective, which means that we have a Christian conviction that there are absolute rights and absolute wrongs, that we are here on earth to love what God loves and hate what he hates. And that means, you know, to hate injustice and to hate wrong and to hate evil, but also to love justice and order and mercy. But to be realistic about it, that we live in a fallen world, that there are true enemies out there. There are enemies out there that are not going to be dissuaded by words alone, that sometimes you have to use force. And I think John McCain showed that kind of optimism and that kind of cynical optimism, and that he was always optimistic about the course of the future, about America prevailing. But he had a cynicism and a realism that informed his policy, that informed the way that he made policy, and saying that the United States has enemies, Russia being, you know, first and foremost among those enemies, and that we would be it would be very bad for us to ignore that or to somehow blow over that, that these enemies are not going to be dissuaded by words alone or by mere negotiations, that we have to use force and we have to be strong. So these were all kind of attributes that we felt important to kind of raise up about John McCain. He wasn't a perfect man. We're in no way saying that, you know, he should be nominated for sainthood. But there were a lot of aspects of his life that I think were worthy of emulation and worthy of study, especially for the Christians.
And I think, too, just you know, so well said in terms of how our faith can intersect with some of the ideals that we see around us. And that idea you referenced as part of the article, that our lives are not our own at the end of the day. And I think sometimes it's easy to forget in America, when we are pursuing happiness as part of our constitutional rights, that happiness, at least according to the original founders, wasn't the idea that I'm going to pursue my own happiness and you better get out of my way as I do so, but that our happiness is defined by the common good we experience together, which is really one of those Christian ideals as well, that we might have to give up our lives in order to experience the happiness that we're looking for.
Right. And I think that understanding lends itself to a generosity and a graciousness of spirit and a policy that wants to see, you know, all boats in the harbor rise. You know, right? It's not just about me. It's not just about my success, but I really want to see other people succeed. I really want to see other sections and areas of society succeed, and that there's real value in that kind of pluralistic understanding that we all occupy the same space, and that we're all better off fundamentally when we're advocating for not just ourselves, but for one another and the interests of one another, especially when those interests are that of freedom and liberty and free exercise.
And how is you do a lot of work at Providence just about American foreign policy, and how was John McCain perceived on the world stage? Was he respected around the world as he often was here in the States?
Well, I think you can kind of see that question answered in the number of world leaders that have eulogized him over the past 3 to 4 days, whether it's Angela Merkel, Vicente Fox, Justin Trudeau, world leaders just across the spectrum have spoken up about his courage and his conviction and the leadership that he provided as kind of an ambassador at large as a United States senator for over 30 years. He was one of the most well-traveled senators. He knew more world leaders, I think, than almost anyone else in the Senate. And, you know, by virtue of the fact that his public career began in wartime, began as a prisoner of war in another nation, he seemed to be acutely aware of the importance of how we interact with other nations, the impact of our policy and our defense policy with other nations, and then also just the sympathy that he seemed to have with other victims of humanitarian crisis and oppression. You know, he was a prisoner. He was imprisoned. He was tortured. He was held by another regime for who he was and who he represented. And so he went across the world, I think, connecting and trying to lift up those who suffered similar persecution. So he truly did have a global presence. And the only people that are not speaking well of him, I think, are America's enemies. I think, you know, Russia has had very little to say. Iran has had very little to say. I mean, there aren't statements that they're releasing in praise of John McCain, and I think that that's very telling, is because they don't see the passing of someone that was, you know, an ally to them, but someone who truly called them out for who and what they are as geopolitical foes of the United States. And so I think you do see his presence on the world stage just by dint of who's honoring him in his passing.
It's Drew Griffin, managing editor of Providence Magazine. You can find his work and his writings at providencemag.com. Just an article released yesterday on the life and legacy of John McCain and how the ideals that he espoused for America really do intersect with our faith. Drew, thanks for taking the time this morning to join us and just reflect on the life and legacy of John McCain.
Absolutely. Thanks, Peter. Anytime.
We'll take a break for Breakpoint and Bottom of the Hour News. And in the second half of this hour, we'll be joined by Ron Hutchcraft, and we'll talk about his ministry among the Native American population in our country. So much more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Morning. So appreciated the conversation with Drew Griffin of Providence Meg, reflecting on the life of John McCain, and especially him bringing up the power of being a person who is meek. And that doesn't mean that we're weak, but I'm mindful of Jesus's statement where he says, blessed or happy are those that are meek. And that word meek there literally is the word that is used for a horse that is broken, a horse that hasn't lost its power at all, but it's under the control now of the master. And that really is the invitation for us, that we're part of something bigger than our own lives, and that we're broken for the control of our master, Jesus. Is one of the profound messages that we want to share on Faith Radio Mornings each morning, that we really serve a king as we're going through the news each morning and the perspectives of the day. And much more to come. We'll be joined by Ron Hutchcraft in a few minutes, and he'll give us an update on his powerful ministry to the Native American community in our country. Yesterday on Faith Radio, we were joined by Greg Howe of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and he was giving advice to parents about how we can help our teens as they're heading off to school maintain their faith.
By the time they're 18, they need to make a choice for themselves. And as a campus minister and having met a lot of students, what often doesn't work is parents dragging a kid to a Christian Fellowship sign-up table, like, here, you need to sign up for this. But I do encourage for the parents, obviously pray for your child, but potentially pray with your child. And by that, I don't mean just pray with them in your presence, but if you were praying in the way that you hope your child would pray when they go to college, how would you pray differently? And so it may be not just questions like, hey, are you praying and studying scripture today? But tell me about your friends and how could I be praying for them? As somebody who wants to love the things that you love and care about the things you care about, I want to pray for your friends too. So don't just pray for your children, but pray with them, or pray with them if they were praying the ways that you hope. Because I think for college students, what they're really looking for now is not just being told, this is what we believe, but seeing concretely, this is how what we believe shapes the way that I live.
That was Greg Howe of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and he was talking with us yesterday about an initiative that they want to develop Christian fellowships at 2,500 college campuses around the country by the year 2030. Great conversation. You can catch that entire segment at myfaithradio.com. Search for Greg Howe or InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and it'll come out. Well, stay with us for more. In just a minute, we'll be joined by Ron Hutchcraft on the line. And when Ron comes in studio or on the phone, he often makes me cry. So I'm going to have Logan throw me the box of Kleenex, and we'll get ready for Ron here next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Have you ever been in public and noticed a parent who was disappointed with their child? You don't have to eavesdrop. You can read the emotion all over their faces. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. The dad's eyes are furrowed. The child's lower lip is sticking out. It's a showdown of wills between father and son. Hey, a parent's attitude toward his child is publicly known. There will always be times when you and I are frustrated or disappointed with our kids. But too many moms and dads have adopted a disappointed vibe. And it's like nothing the kid does can bring a smile. And you know what? That's not only clear to the people around you, but it's abundantly clear to your teen. So, what are you broadcasting? What's your attitude toward your kids?
Mark Gregston is devoted to helping parents of struggling teens. Find his small group curricula online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and thrilled to be joined on the line by a regular guest of the show, Ron Hutchcraft, who has just done so much in many years of ministry and spends a lot of time now ministering to people in the Native American community with powerful stories of hope and future in a community that often historically has not experienced that. So good morning, Ron.
Well, good morning. What is this about making people cry when I come in the studio?
Well, the deal is, Ron, is you come in and you tell these stories, and I'm all choked up. I got to hit the off button on my microphone, and I got to maybe have somebody else ask the question, because you get into this, and there's such hope and power in the stories, and I kind of stick a quarter in you, and you just keep going. It's outstanding. I love it.
Well, I'm listening. If I'm listening, like, this guy's going to make you cry, I'm going to go to another place. I don't want to hear that.
It's tears.
That's what I was hoping for.
It's tears of joy.
Well, we can rejoice today. We got a lot to rejoice about. I got some wonderful news to tell you since I was there. By the way, I'm sorry for the mayhem I called when I caused when I was live in the studio. I noticed you wanted to do me today by phone so you could hang up on me if necessary. Is that right?
Yeah, we do. We have special Ron Hutchcraft bouncers at the door now. So if you show up, you can call us on your cell phone from just outside the studio. But yeah, no, you can't come in anymore, Ron.
Okay. Hey, I want to thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to mobilize some of your listeners to pray for this past Summer of Hope, which now is holy history. And would you be interested to know how God answered those prayers?
I would love to hear, Ron. It's such just they're wonderful stories.
Well, let me summarize, first of all, realizing that you cannot tell this story really numerically in any full way, but I'll tell you what I can quantify, and then there's a lot more to say. But first of all, I was traveling, for those who aren't aware of it, I had the privilege of traveling with a team of 46 what I would call walking miracles. All of them have lived tremendous brokenness in their lives growing up on reservations. They represent 28 different Indian nations within that 46 young people. They have been the drug users. They have been the dealers. They have been the almost suicides. They have been the suicide attempts. They have been the sexual abuse and sexual violence victims. And they have come out of that with a story of hope about a brown-skinned savior from a tribe named called Judah, a man named Jesus, who lived in a place people thought nothing good would come from, and who lived on land that had been occupied by others, and who died a violent death, so much like the reservation. And they have traveled across that region this summer to 12 different reservations, and they have canvassed homes, thousands of homes on those reservations. They have, in 27 days, these young men and women, these warriors, led 29 rescue events. And among a people, and I would call Native Americans, Pete, the unfinished business of the American church, because they were our first mission field, and they may be our last mission frontier, because after 400 years, only 4% know Christ. And so it's not common to have very many Native Americans come to Christ. But, you know, I've seen this. I've been an eyewitness. I was on the bus praying as I watched these young warriors introduce over 600 Native young people to begin a personal relationship with Jesus Christ this summer. That can only be God. To God be all the glory. Great things he has done, and he has done it through these amazing broken vessels who have hope to share and did it boldly and did it clearly and did it relentlessly this summer.
Well, and I think, Ron, just and when you tell some of these stories, and I just think often, we had Dr. Rosemary Stein on in the first hour, and she was talking about the depression and the suicide rates that are growing in our country. But there's almost the idea that you have to get to a place of such brokenness before you're really ready to hear the message of hope. And is that what you're finding, just the historic lack of hope because of being put on reservations and not really having a future in the Native American community, that there's a real hunger for the gospel?
Well, you know, I don't know. They don't know they're hungry for the gospel because obviously the lie that has been believed and perpetrated by our enemy, I believe, is to blind Native Americans to Jesus, is that he's the white man's God. And there's a lot of history to use as evidence because so much that they lost was taken in the name of Christianity. That wasn't Jesus, nor would it have ever been Jesus, but they've lost land and language and lives. And also, many of the messengers of the message of Christ have looked like me. You know, they have been white people like me, and we come with good hearts. But a lot of times, that just reinforces, yeah, this is the white man's God. This is not for us. I've read the missions histories, Pete, and I'll tell you, there I can't find anywhere where you see hundreds of Native Americans coming to Christ like this. And the good news is, you know, with now these some 600 Native young people now in the family of God, which is just staggering, and just even to say it, I continue to go almost gasp when I say it because it's just unbelievable that on all these reservations we have trained the local people how to do effective follow-up and how to turn this moment into a movement. And we're getting reports back now as they use the follow-up strategy. These are people who have never been able to find anything that broke through to the young people. But now there is momentum. And we're getting reports back of the follow-up events they're holding, and they're well-attended. In some cases, they're as well-attended as our event was with the team there. And we even have people coming to Christ now with the team gone just through the follow-up events. So that spirit of what God started is continuing. But I'll tell you, you mentioned the hopelessness and the despair and the feeling that nothing's ever going to change. I don't. If you ask me what's changing on reservations, I can only give you my impression, but I have never in any summer that I can remember been to so many reservations where the tribe has declared a crisis or an emergency, either over suicide, over drug dealing, drug trafficking, drug deaths. Let me tell you about one Minnesota reservation that the team went to. There's only 1,100 people on this entire reservation, but in a community of 1,100 people, they have had 75 drug overdoses since 2016. There are 15 drug overdose deaths. And one girl who came to our event said, I've lost 10 friends. I'm not lost, but she said, I've had 10 friends overdose in the last month. So things have reached critical proportion. On another reservation, the very, very steeped in the old ways, the most traditional of the reservations probably, we were not allowed to even canvass there. It's the first time I can ever remember in 20-some years we were not allowed to go door-to-door and invite people to come. Not we, but they, the team, these Native young people. And there the tribe has declared a crisis because of the suicides and the drug thing. So it is just nothing's working. It's out of control. And into this come these incredible messengers of hope. I'll tell you about one place in your region that is the most densely populated Native community in all of America. Very urban, very dangerous, very deadly. There are regular headlines of the drug issues there, of the violence, of the gang violence that is there. And the team went in there for two nights. I have to tell you that they were, some of them from reservations that are very remote. It was an intimidating environment, believe me, to be in. But we had the privilege of being right in the middle of the housing where the people live, and across from a park that is known to be a place where there have been a lot of injuries, a lot of violence, a lot of dying. And, you know, this is how Christ works. There was a miracle those nights that we were there, and I think everybody knew it was a miracle, and we didn't know it was until we were told. They said, there is nobody in the park. There always is. There's always terrible stuff going on. It is totally peaceful in this whole area right now. No one could explain the peace. Well, we can. The peace of Christ. Jesus came in this team, and peace came to that place. And in itself, that was a witness, without saying anything, to the power of the Jesus that these young men and women presented. Well, they got over their intimidation, and they just jumped in and began to make personal connections with these young people. Turns out that a young man from Alaska, from a remote village 400 miles from a road, has the same story as a Native young person in that urban mix right there. Because this just, it's everywhere. And that began to capture the hearts of the young people. I remember when a powerful Navajo young woman who's on our team got up, and she had a backpack on her back full of rocks that she carried around most of the night. Nobody knew what she was carrying. And she talked about how on the night when she had a gun to her head to end her life, that Jesus had come to her, and she had given her life to him, and how she discovered that what he did on that cross loved her enough to do that, and the resurrection power that came from an empty tomb into her life was able to bring her out of the darkness of the violation, sexual violation that she had experienced at the hands of someone deeply trusted, and all the drugs and all the violence she'd been involved in. And she began to, she emptied out those rocks right there on the pavement and said, this is what Jesus can do, is he can take all those rocks, he can forgive, he can heal like nobody else can. And she had the credentials from her life to back that up.
Oh, Ron, it's just such an incredible story, again, that you share of hope and faith. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I would love to get your perspective on what you've learned ministering in the Native American population for just the broader population and how we can share the gospel. So more in a moment with Ron Hutchcraft on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 7 minutes to the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and joined by one of our favorite and inspiring guests, Ron Hutchcraft, here talking about sharing the gospel in the Native American community and the ministry he's a part of. Ron, we have just a couple minutes left here for the morning show, and I'd be curious your thoughts. You've spent a lot of time sharing the gospel for your entire life, working for Billy Graham and others, and what have you learned in the Native American community in sharing the gospel that might be appropriate for a wider audience today?
Boy, that is such a great question. I wish I got asked it more often because there's a lot to learn. The principles of what's working and breaking through where perhaps nothing has for centuries are transferable to any believer who's listening today. I'd say this. Number one, the most powerful weapon you have is your hope story. Every follower of Christ has a story of hope. You say, well, I don't have that kind of background. It doesn't matter what kind of background. How is your life different because of Jesus? Your stressful times, your lonely times, the funeral, how is it different because of Jesus? The bad news from the doctor, how are you a different parent, a different spouse, a different brother or sister or friend? How are you different because of Jesus? Your hope story, no one can argue with that. Once I was blind, now I can see. Yeah, you were, now you can't. No one can argue with that. It's true. And you tell them the difference was Jesus. So you embed the story of Jesus and what happened on that cross and his resurrection in your hope story as what changed you. That hope story, that is literally what is breaking through in Native America. And you've got one, you tell that hope story. Number two, stick to Jesus. We do not get into religion. We do not get into debates over religion. We don't talk about Christianity. We don't talk about why are you acting that way, condemning. It is all about Jesus and his cross. You stick to Jesus and his cross. Paul said, when I was with you, I resolved I wouldn't talk about anything but Jesus Christ and him crucified. You stick to Jesus. Don't go anywhere else. And thirdly, the best person to reach a tribe is somebody from that tribe. Native Americans are breaking through to Native Americans. No surprise. Moms listen to moms, and business people listen to business people, and golfers listen to golfers, and hunters listen to hunters, and soccer players listen to soccer players, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Cancer survivors listen to cancer survivors. Do you realize that your biography and your position right now, where you live, where you work, what you're interested in, has been given to you by Jesus to help somebody go to heaven with you? You don't wait for somebody else to come along. Somebody from the tribe is the best person to reach the tribe. And we're all in more than one tribe. So realize that you're the personal representative of Jesus to your tribe. And I'll tell you what these young people breaking through so dramatically have demonstrated, that they are living proof that no matter how broken, no matter how wounded your life might be, Jesus has the power to make all things new and to take what were the greatest hurts of your life and recycle that into hope for other people and redeem the darkest parts of your life by making it hope and life for other people.
No, Ron, I mean, it couldn't be a more powerful word that we're all bearers of the gospel like that. And just to appreciate the message that we really are put in a place to share the love and the beauty of Jesus' kingdom. Ron, we'll take the bouncers away from the door. Thanks for joining us again this morning. Look forward to seeing you again here real soon. We'll come back from a short break and wrap up our show. But we talk often on Faith Radio Mornings about the hope and the future that we have in the beautiful kingdom of Jesus. And I know very few people that embody that hope in the way that Ron Hutchcraft does. And I think, you know, we are just chatting off air. I think if we gave him an hour to talk, he could talk for an hour passionately, authentically, and really about the hope stories that have had some 2,000 years after that event on the cross and the empty tomb. There still is hope, and there still is future in the beautiful kingdom of Jesus. Thanks for listening again this morning on Faith Radio Mornings, and we'll catch you tomorrow. That tomb is empty.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.